They were high school sweethearts who got married and had two kids. It's the Bruins from a new location. They work all day and that's okay. They're the Bruins. She is a journalist. She is a journalist. He is a they talk about the news and whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Bruins.
Doesn't fade.
Yeah, I saw that. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our low quality, low effort podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Matt Laurent.
I think it's actually low effort, low quality.
Yeah.
So they like it when I mix it up.
Yeah, they're always saying that.
People are always saying mix it up a little bit.
Change the order of the words a little bit.
Yeah, that's what the people want. They want novelty and we bring it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were on vacation this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the late upload. We were in Los Angeles, as some of you saw, and some of you experienced in person.
Mm-hmm. Our live taping.
Yeah, well, we didn't tape anything, but
okay, yeah.
We
good point.
Went to this bar, and it was called R Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's another R bar in LA that is very racist and run by a neo-Nazi.
Yeah, I was told that.
And so it was just my luck that I would pick a place that had two versions, one of them extremely racist. I just thought R bar looked cool.
Yeah, you were trying to edgelord a little bit.
I was not, absolutely not. A friend who grew up in LA recommended R bar. And so I'll have to take this up with him. Anyway, it was great. It was great meeting all of you guys. Someone brought me a cookie.
That was very nice.
I got to sign a book. It was awesome. It was really cool. It was great talking to everybody. I got maybe a little tipsy and told Matt to take his shirt off and show everyone his muscles.
I didn't scan this at all at the time, but that's what you're telling me you said. So.
I felt very silly afterwards. But, you know, a good time was had by all, I think. Matt's saying that's the first time hearing of this with Tiny Dancer playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a little distracted as I'm trying to get my audio files lined up.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was this video with Trump and...
Yeah, I know about Tiny Dancer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I was just making sure the audience did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I got one. Ready?
I'm ready.
Audio grab bag!
All right. Is this our first episode since the eclipse?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So I have some eclipse content from awesome. Andy Elliott.
Right on the ball with that.
Guys, some of you don't need to be looking at the sun today. You need to go back and look at your bank account. Your ass has got work to do.
Okay. All right.
You know, it's important to stay on that grind. Don't let the eclipse distract you.
Yeah. Then yeah.
That's what I'm always saying, at least.
A lot of y'all don't need to be looking at the sun, in my opinion.
No.
Not
neither
just some
suns
of you.
nor TVs. You know, you need to be focusing on that whiteboard. That's where you're gonna make your money,
flipping
on that
tires.
Whiteboard flipping tires. There was actually a story of a guy who that I saw recently who was doing the whole like I could go from nothing to, you know, the sort of, what was the thing that show called, the
Something Millionaire?
Something Millionaire, yeah. His story is very interesting. This like happens occasionally, right? And Yeah, let me see if I can find it. It's very odd, but I can't actually find it. But the story was this guy did it, and his like parents got sick, and then he got sick, and whatever. At the end of the day, he left with he had made $60,000. He was like, that's basically success.
Yeah,
even though he said he was going to make a million or whatever. So.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not bad.
6% of the way there, I suppose. Yeah. It's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
All right, one more. We should have teed some of this up, but, you know. It is low effort. It is low effort, you know. Here we go.
Put your hand up if you're gay. Okay. Now put your hand up if you're straight. None of you are working in my company. Why would you pick one when you can have both? What does that say about your ambition, your drive? Where are your freaking goals, man? Everyone in my company is bi. Because bi is one and all. They're ambitious. They're hungry. They have their cake and they eat it too. And if you're not hungry, well then there's the door, muchacho. Stop wasting my time. So, let me rephrase the question. Who here is bi? Okay.
So there you go.
This is one of the more deranged things I've ever heard, honestly.
It's a, you know, it's a take on the masculinity influencers. I liked it.
Yeah, it's
it's a good bit.
It's a bit? Okay, I thought maybe it was someone being serious.
No.
Damn, that's...
No, it was a bit.
That's insane. All right.
Did you see the creepy Caitlin Clark question?
Yes, I checked that out on the plane.
Oh, wow. What do you think of that?
Look at me. Yeah, I thought it was kind of creepy. I mean, the dude was trying to be funny, and admiring, but like, now is not the time or place. You're doing journalism. Don't be like, hey, my DMs are open.
And what does it say? It says, after being given the mic to ask Clark a question, Indianapolis Star sports columnist Greg Doyle made a heart shape with his hands at Clark, leading Clark to ask him, "You like that?" Doyle responded, "I like that you're here." Clark then replied, "I do that at my family after every game, so it's pretty cool." Instead of moving on from the awkward moment, Doyle said, "Okay, well, start doing it to me and we'll get along just fine."
Yeah, I mean, I get where he's coming from.
What, do you?
But
what do you, where do you, what are, where is he coming from?
Well, like, you know, Caitlin Clark is really pretty and she's really impressive. And, you know, it's not hard to understand how somebody would be interested in Caitlin Clark.
If you mean, yeah, I get where he's coming from, that he is he's publicly hitting on this person who's supposed to be covering.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that, you know, he has those kinds of feelings, but certainly you don't disclose them to her, and this, especially if you're covering her. Mm-hmm. You got to keep your crush to yourself, I think. It's not professional.
Not professional, though. Certainly not.
Not professional.
Well...
Crazy, crazy shit going on at Columbia University. Actually, the friend attends Columbia law school, and shit's popping off. They made all classes virtual.
Yeah.
They're like, campus is unsafe right now or something, even though there's just a protest going on.
Big outbreak of anti-Semitism there.
That's what people are saying. I keep getting these emails from PR agencies. And the PR agencies are like, I'm connected to a number of current students who can speak to the unsafe and anti-Semitic atmosphere on campus. And I'm like, it's just crazy because the pro-Palestinian students don't have PR agencies trying to get their message and their voice out. And it just becomes clear how completely biased the media has been on this issue. Just absurdly biased. It's really troubling to see. It's, I guess, like what the media did after 9/11.
Yeah, but I feel like, I feel like the Israeli side has not fared so well. I mean, I guess problem is just the objective facts on the ground are pretty gruesome. After a while, it becomes a little bit tough to deal with that, you know?
Someone told me recently that Israel is losing. What could this possibly mean? What?
You know, I guess on some level they depend on international support, and you know, like any country, especially a small country, you're wanting to stay in the good graces of other people and other countries, and they're kind of torching that to a significant extent.
That's,
you know,
true.
Small nations are really dependent on the globe, you know, because they are unable to, you know, they rely a lot on imports and exports and stuff, you know.
Oh, that's cute. They're a small bean.
Yeah,
they just,
you know,
need to be taken care of.
So, yeah, like a country like the U.S. is like 11% or something of our GDP. You know, we 11% of the stuff we import, export, essentially, or maybe a little bit more than that for import. But then you take a small country and it goes up to 50% or more. So, and, you know, you're just not going to have the expertise or the materials to make everything you need. I don't know. I don't know if it's thought out that much precisely, but, you know, in the long run, they need to maintain some kind of support in the world in order to probably, you know, flourish. And they seem to be lighting that on fire at the moment.
Lost Ireland and Spain completely.
And Norway.
They're not doing well. This is why Trump said, he told an Israeli newspaper that if he had advice to give Israel, it would be to, quote, wrap it up because you're losing the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's good advice.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Donald Trump said ceasefire. People are like, Trump would just be worse on Israel than Biden, but how could he possibly be worse if this is what he's suggesting?
Oh, yeah, I don't know how much worse he would be. It's kind of, it's hard to get too much worse, you would think, than what is happening already. But
also, Trump seems, you know, he seems pretty serious about a foreign policy not being his thing.
He seems disinterested in foreign policy, like most people. He doesn't have that sort of...
Clintonian.
A lot you can tell with a certain kind of sophisticated politician or who imagines themselves that way. They have the, what was it, Nixon said, in contrast to when he was trying to describe sort of the pointlessness and silliness of domestic policy, he described it as outhouses in Peoria.
Yeah.
And that there's a sense of that for some people where they're like, look, it's our role in the globe. That's where the real action is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really care about that too much personally.
I feel like those people who are like, it's the U.S.'s role on the globe, like they are invariably insane.
I think they just kind of get bored of the tea. Like he says, outhouses in Peoria, like how much can you get that pumped up about, let's reform the healthcare system or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
but
it's
not
a much grander vision of, you know, interacting on the world stage and stuff.
Yeah, but like not every foreign policy weirdo begins life as a domestic policy person and then becomes a foreign policy person out of boredom.
Yeah, I shouldn't say tired. I think they just look at it and they're like, this is, but like clash of powers is a much more interesting thing, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of weird assumptions go into that kind of shit.
But it does seem like Trump is less intrigued by that. Like he loves domestic petty stuff, you know, like entertainment and culture and whatever, right?
He's
not like putting chess pieces on his little risk board or whatever,
no,
and figuring out, you know, geopolitics or whatever. He just doesn't seem to care too much about all that.
Something to be admired there.
Seems unusual for a president. Like even Biden was a big foreign policy, like, you know, but it seems very typical of most people. Most people don't care at all about foreign policy, except insofar as it, you know, has some connection to them. You know, you know, if we're doing some kind of war, maybe they'll get interested in it or, you know, stuff like that. But this sort of day-to-day geopolitical, like, I don't know, Syria, and so no one cares about that.
Yeah, it's true. It's reflected in the votes. Did we not have one more audio link in the doc?
You sent me a 43-minute video. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to play that?
I figured we could play that on the podcast.
Yeah.
No, just, you know. Start from
I see
the beginning.
We could maybe line up some of this audio. What do you mean? Do you mean Matt could maybe? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would be morally supporting you.
Why not just put some timestamps in there and I could just do it that way? Why am I meant to do this?
You know, I thought you would want to decide.
I would want to listen to 45 minutes of Tucker.
Listen, give me a break, man.
On 2X, it's only 22 and a half minutes.
I thought maybe, you know, just play, you know, from the beginning and then, you know, we'll cut it off after a reasonable amount of time.
I mean, is he hot at the beginning?
I think so. From what I remember, you can clearly see what he's getting at from the very top.
All right, cool. It's low effort, but, you know, I guess that's
the idea.
I'm
sorry.
Right?
Look, we were on vacation and then our kids got back from Disney World. And it's just been chaos.
Jane scored a goal yesterday.
Yeah, good for Jane. She's killing it.
Ending her long drought.
She was very cuddly when she got home, which was very sweet.
Yeah, she tied it up with 1 minute left. So saved them a point on the league table.
A consistent but almost never noted theme of American foreign policy is that it is always the Christians who suffer.
All right.
When there's a war abroad that the United States is funding, it is Christians who tend to die disproportionately. And this goes back a long way, 60 years, really, to Vietnam, where Catholics in that country were massacred.
Damn,
it's
true,
accelerated.
Though.
So, for example, during the more than a decade the U.S. government spent occupying Iraq, the ancient Christian community of Iraq was completely devastated.
That's factual.
9 out of 10 of them are no longer there. They're gone. That was an effect of our foreign policy, but it was almost never noted in the United States and almost never, ever even mentioned by Christian clergy in this country, many of whom supported that war and that occupation. Why is that? Maybe because it wasn't. Virtually no one in any American church said anything when Christians were killed in Syria, very often by Islamic extremists paid for by the United States.
Ooh.
But nobody said anything, and anyone who did was denounced as a kook or a bigot somehow. Standing up for Christians was not allowed in the U.S. media. We saw that firsthand. And so, once again, it continued. In Ukraine, where the U.S. government has sent far more than $100 billion to the Ukrainian government, and what happened? What did that government do? Well, it banned an entire Christian denomination. The Zelensky government is busy throwing Orthodox priests and nuns in jail and having the army raid churches. But again, not a word. But what about Gaza? What about the entire region in the Middle East?
Yeah,
where,
what about
there's
that?
Very intense fighting going on.
Tell me,
many
Tucker.
Christian churches in the United States, particularly evangelical churches, support that. But there is virtually never a word about the Christians who live there, the ancient Christian community in Gaza, the West Bank, and Israel proper. So, because no one has said a word, there has been great suffering among the Christian population in that region. In October, a Greek Orthodox church in the Gaza Strip was hit by an airstrike. We're showing the video now. The church is in ruins. At least 17 people were killed that day. And again, that was hardly the first time that fighting in that region killed Christians. You'll remember the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem almost 20 years ago, where a clergyman was killed in the church with American weapons.
You can probably cut it now.
Christian clergy.
Thank you. What do you think about this arg, Matt? I saw you having some reactions to it.
You know, I mean, it's an interesting move, I guess, right? It's no different than, honestly, you remember that person on that panel who was saying, look, I'm pro-choice, but I can't, you know, really countenance that with the support of Biden because, you know, in Palestine, they're killing pregnant women. You're like, okay. So you kind of pick your sort of population group And then everything kind of, you just, whatever your arg is, you always link it back to them.
Yeah.
And that was the thing back in the day, I remember, with the quote unquote just the anything followed by the word justice.
Yeah.
That was how all that worked. I always remember that. I always like identified that, whether it was like reproductive justice or food justice or energy justice or whatever. The premise between all for all of that was you just kind of, for every left-wing position in the kind of left-wing world of thought, you just link it back to whatever your thing is. You know, if it's food, then you find some way to be like, and so you see, actually, the repeal of Roe is bad for farm workers who sometimes get pregnant. And you're like, okay, yeah. And farm workers, obviously, part of the food system. So it's really a food justice issue when you think about it. Like, that was the shit that they would do. And I was like, I guess, man, I don't know. It seems like that's pretty attenuated, as we would say, a little bit of a attenuated connection. Obviously, in the case of Israel and Gaza, probably, you know, not a whole lot of action involving Christians, you know? Like, well, he gives examples of one, you know, how many are we talking about? A few dozen? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just kind of silly. But I know, like, the idea here is to be like, well, you know, we can link into a group that we're sympathetic to. And if we can link into a group we're sympathetic to, that's going to be, you know, a new argument.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this was one of the questions that occurred to me while I was watching this, is I was like, does he have, you know, let's say bad intentions, right, that motivate this? Or is he instead doing a move where he's like, used to hearing Christians in his population, in his bracket, saying, well, for Christian reasons, I've got to support Israel. And he's like, actually, for Christian reasons, you can't support Israel or basically any other U.S. Wars of imperialism.
Maybe he's viewing it as a counter to that stuff, to say, oh, well, the sort of Christians United for Israel type stuff, where this is either because they don't like Muslims or because they have some kind of view about end times or whatever it is, that seems to be a thing among very religious Christians of a sort, is that it's all goes along with support for Israel. And so I guess in that context, if he wants to be like, look, Israel's actually anti-Christian in some sense, because they're not distinguishing between the Gazans of different faiths, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, probably it would be it would be interesting if they did. I don't know what you would make of that if they just, you know, the Catholic Church that's in there or whatever, right?
Like, yeah.
They just sort of somehow spared all that. That would definitely be a smart move for some people, but also would look kind of suspicious, you know? Like they're just engaged in anti-Muslim type activities.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Tucker is, he's doing an interesting move, I think, to respond to people in his cohort. Mm-hmm. And it's something I would like, just on those grounds, right? I like that it's a response to these very religious Christians. It's always fun and entertaining to me when Christians with shitty politics get shown up to be less serious Christians than Christians with good politics. Many such cases. I enjoy that kind of move. On the other hand, what if he's just got bad intentions, you know, and this is part of that? I don't know.
Obviously he's kind of a shit stirrer, attention seeking type individual. So, he likes to be all over the place. Speaking of Christians, we have Sean Fain in the membrane.
All right.
Winning at the Volkswagen plant there in Tennessee. First win for the UAW in a auto plant in many, many years, decades, I think. and the first auto plant ever unionized in the South. And we have his speech, a clip from his speech.
All over this nation has your back in this fight. And as we begin this next chapter, I want you guys to remember one thing again. No one's going to do it for you.
Stand down!
You're going to win what you're willing to fight for.
Yeah!
And as Matthew 17:20 states,
hell yeah.
Quote this. Truly I tell you, if you have faith, as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain,
move,
move from here to there, and it will move.
Hell yes. Hell yes.
That's his end there.
Get their ass, Sean.
It's his Bible quote.
This dude's awesome.
He loves the Bible. He
fucking rocks.
He loves him some Bible.
He took the right message away from the Gospels. You gotta love him. People all over the country are saying
everyone
love
loves
Sean
him.
Fain.
Everyone loves Sean Fain. I mean, he's all over the place, too. He was at Labor Notes like the next day. I mean, he's just burning the oil.
He's doing it all. Someone should do a magazine profile of him. I wonder who.
You did an article about him.
Yeah, but just about his Christianity, but not getting into his sort of whole radical politics and what makes him so successful at these unionization efforts. That's something that a magazine writer could feasibly.
Oh, I mean, yeah, good. Yeah. I mean, that we'll be debating that forever and ever, right? It's like, why are they winning now? Like, because they've run campaigns at this plant before and not been successful. Is it because of Fain? Is it because of economic conditions? Is it because just kind of public mood and sentiment has turned on it? Is it because their prior stuff where they won those contracts with the big three, you know, people will fight on this forever and ever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's why it makes good material for an article.
Yeah, but see, for me, I need the article to have the answer.
Oh, no, that's not prestigious.
Yeah, I need to, nah, just break it down for me.
just tell me the facts of the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
If you more can, like a newspaper writer.
Yeah, five paragraphs, look, hopefully, if you can, that would be ideal. Just give me the answer, you know?
You know, what sometimes people say, the article is good if it resists easy conclusions.
No.
You know.
Don't resist them. Lean into them, you know? Especially if they're true.
I mean, that's not how I write. I'm very big on the ambiguity in the soul and whether people are good or evil or if that's even a possible distinction to make. I think it's not.
Well, look, sometimes some issues require that. But, you know, if not, that's definitely what you want to avoid.
Yeah.
If you can. You're trying to find the straightforward answer so then we can, you know, move on and solve the problem, you know?
My mom told me a story about the kids coming through airport security.
Okay.
And this guy pulled them aside, who I guess was like the jacked guy in the Dubai airport.
Mm-hmm.
The security guy who's like, why are you trying to ruin my society when someone brings in weed or whatever?
Yep.
And he was like, all right, I need to talk to the minors. I need to ask them some questions.
Mm-hmm.
And like apparently the kids just completely refused to talk to this guy at all. And every time he asked them more questions, they would become more insistent that they weren't saying anything.
Because he's trying to figure out their identity. I've seen this before. This when I've flown with them, they've done this as well.
And they just wouldn't respond with their names, with who mom and dad were to them. They wouldn't even respond with their ages, although Claire held up four fingers. She was willing to go that far, but
that's just kind of jarring to just be asked these questions. But yeah, no, they definitely have resisted that before when I've flown with them.
I was very proud of them for just not talking to a male stranger, basically. Good job. That's absolutely the approach You need to have no grown man needs to be talking to my kids.
I don't think this has to do with gender. Remember, Claire would not tell her female soccer coach her name.
LOL, that's true. But what about Jane?
Yeah, Jane's usually more outgoing.
Yeah, they were both pretty reticent. Yeah, Claire told her female soccer coach to ask Matt for her name.
Yeah. Yeah, halfway through the first practice, the coach came over and was like, what's her name? She keeps saying, I have to ask you.
That's so cute.
The how was your trip to Los Angeles, by the way?
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, honestly, it was great.
Good, yeah. What'd you get up to?
Well, we got a cool Airbnb in Hollywood. And
Liz would not disclose the price of this to me.
It's just not important. It's not relevant to the conversation.
Okay.
And it's
concerning.
It was awesome, except we lost one of Matt's earbuds.
Yeah, but I got new earbuds and I like them better. So
yeah, good. So maybe it was a blessing in disguise.
I guess. Yeah.
What we get up to? Well, I bought a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
intoxicants,
yeah.
Not me. I didn't get up to any of that.
Hallucinogens and whatnot. You know, just easier to get in LA than on the East Coast at this stage. I mean, you can get mushrooms on the East Coast, but I don't want to have to grind them up and drink them in tea. I like the idea of gummies and chocolate bars, etc. So got a bunch of that stuff. Lovely, lovely experience there. We visited with podcast listeners.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great podcast listener meetup, a brewhead meetup, as they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
We hung out with a guy who is the producer for Chapo.
We keep hearing his name as if people don't know.
Well, I mean, look, it's up to him if he wants to be associated with us.
Well, you all just did associate him.
Well, look, it's plausible deniability here. Okay. He can be like, oh, I'm just one producer.
Yeah, Chapo. That was what you said at one point. You're like, one of the producers. I'm like, how do you imagine this
I'm
thing
just
to work?
I'm trying to give him reasonable cover.
All right.
You know, we're very canceled people. And someone may not want to be known to associate with us. I genuinely have that fear when I make friends, especially friends in my industry.
Not me.
I'm like, you got to be careful because people will say bad things about you if you're friends with me. And then I feel bad about the idea of that happening and of them being put in a position where they kind of need to denounce me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, had a great time in L.A.,
I went hiking a couple times.
Matt went hiking.
Including the Angeles National Forest where I saw a rainbow waterfall.
We had dinner with Nellie Bowles, who asked Matt to have dinner in a public blog post. So we couldn't turn this down. and Caitlin Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys probably have negative opinions of these people. But I thought the dinner was really nice. Caitlin Flanagan's really funny.
Caitlin Flanagan definitely is a ball of energy.
She brings the whole party, man.
Yeah.
When she gets there, shit goes crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Eccentric.
She's eccentric. She's got biting humor. She can stick with a bit. Yeah, she's great.
And I had a debate of sorts.
Yeah, with Claremont. How'd that go?
Patrick Brown. You know, I can do this stuff in my sleep. So
Matt says the welfare state's over. He cracked it.
The welfare state is solved. I've solved that. Now, yeah. I don't know when the rest of the world's going to figure it out, but it's solved. No one has said anything to me critical about it. I haven't been able to just brush off in at least 2-3 years. You know what I mean?
In like 1,000 years, they'll see you as like Da Vinci. You're just like way ahead of your time.
Well, I'm not even though. It's like this was solved freaking 50, 80 years ago. Like,
do you think you've contributed anything that the Nordics don't currently recognize about the welfare state?
I think the main thing I contributed to some extent was the effort to kind of systematize it around non-workers.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you can see that in it, but I don't think it, you know, it was as strongly articulated that way. You know,
yeah.
The ability to see, oh, all the benefits are pretty actually interestingly connected in
yeah.
a way, right? It's not just kind of a hodgepodge of things. They all center around people who currently are not in the labor market.
Yes.
Or who are not working, at least. Yeah, I think that's a big one. And it pays so many dividends, you know? It's such a clean little heuristic around it, you know?
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, not too much. But, you know, it's all clean and you debate people and they kind of get spun around and, you know, I don't know. I find it real easy to win these. You know, I did the same with Yaron Brooks. I mean, I'm getting to the point now. You know what I'm getting? Because I did this with Yaron. Yaron is a... I just now recognize this. I'm starting to blend into my late debate years.
Yeah.
Where I'm kind of like a little tired.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like kind of throwing shit out. You know?
Yeah.
Like the debate I did with Yaron was focused entirely on nature.
Yeah.
It was a critique about the unownedness of nature.
Okay. Interesting, Kay. Yeah.
It's you can still win with it, you know what yeah. I mean? But it's not where I would normally go. But, you know, it's like time to mix it up. Like, how many times am I just going to just hammer someone with, like, just the strongest welfare args?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's see if we can root it somewhere else. Bring in some other overlapping arguments that are maybe not as strong, but that are still, you know, able to be won.
Yeah, I mean, they're funny and interesting. That's what counts.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at these days.
Yeah.
But the kids like it. You know, the colleges are fun because, you know, the kids, you know, it's all new to them. So
yeah.
they're having a good one.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was fun. You know, a lot of interesting people. I think that's supposed to be a more conservative college or something.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize in advance, but didn't really see. I guess it seemed like that a little bit. Like, but I would say, you know, sort of like more centrist than you would normally expect. You know,
yeah.
Like one of the kind of seeming sort of like leading student was this girl who had a laptop and it had like the Biden-Harris sticker on it, like a Federal Reserve sticker mm-hmm. and like a Yimby sticker and stuff.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, all right. So that's what we're dealing with here. I mean, she was fine. I didn't have any problem with her, but you know, that's the situation, I guess you would say.
I have a lot of stickers on my laptop.
I think I just have the one hamburger sticker that Jane put on there.
Yeah, a bunch of mine Jane put on there. Let's see what I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pumpkin spice latte, a sticker from a cookie maker I like,
mm-hmm.
a frog in a cowboy hat, a little holographic thing that says, I come in peace, a duck in a pond.
Gross.
And a rainbow heart, an Amy Winehouse sticker, and a weed leaf.
Hmm. What were some highlights? I told, trying to hit these people with different things, you know, like, so, is fertility a problem? Well, I don't know. In the U.S., it's not that big a problem because of immigration, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you kind of hit Patrick and you're like, you know, Patrick, those immigrants are Christians.
It's true.
And the crowd had a little titter at that. They thought that was funny, you know.
I've been saying this.
Like, you know, those are some Catholics coming across.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. And they're specifically not Protestant, although that's having a big moment in Latin America right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because... those args from Lutheran, they're real good.
No, that's not the kind of Protestantism that's happening. They're not becoming Lutherans. They're becoming like hardcore Pentecostals.
Yeah, well, you know, but because of the args, you know?
I doubt this is motivated by args. I think it's just a very charismatic experience.
95 theses is way too many.
Yeah.
Cut it down to 10. People love lists of 10. Top 10 reasons the Catholic hierarchy has to go. That would be a great bit. 95.
Ooh. Yeah, 95's a lot to
They
get
can't
to.
All be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's too much. If you asked me to write 95 theses on the welfare state, I couldn't. They wouldn't all be good.
You don't think so? You couldn't just break things down into their constituent parts?
I would tap out after a dozen, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
20, just the long tail of quality there is just going to be real shit, I think.
Yeah, I can't really think of 95 things to say about the death penalty, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Which one is your favorite thesis?
I don't know that I have a favorite.
Have you read all of them?
95 theses. Yeah, back in grad school, we went over all of them.
Here we go. Actually, let's ask ChatGPT what it thinks the best theses are. Of Luther's 95 theses, which ones are the top five? While all of these are significant for different reasons, some are more frequently highlighted due to their direct impact or their incisive critique of church practices. Here are five of the most notable ones. So they go for the most highlighted.
Okay.
That is their standard for best or top. Okay. Thesis number one. So, you know, I guess he was doing pretty good starting out there. When our Lord and Master Jesus Christ said, repent, he willed the entire life of believers to be one of repentance. This opening thesis sets the tone for the entire document, emphasizing the ongoing nature of repentance rather than a single act associated with indulgence purchasing. Yeah?
Yeah.
Fair?
Yeah, fair.
Thesis number 32. Those who believe that they can be certain of their salvation because they have indulgence letters will be eternally damned together with their teachers.
I don't know that that's true.
Here Luther directly challenges... Fucking cable company. Here Luther directly challenges the cable, the internet. We don't have cable. Come on. Luther directly challenges the assurance of salvation that was being sold through indulgences. Not a big fan of indulgences here.
We still have indulgences.
Thesis 36 is also about indulgence. Any truly repentant Christian has a right to full remission of penalty and guilt, even without indulgence letters. You agree with that?
Yeah.
As long as you're truly repentant, you don't need an indulgence letter.
I mean, you need some things, you know, even if you're truly repentant, like you have to go to confession. But you know, I don't agree with by doing it all with paid indulgence letters. You should never pay for a sacrament, nor is having an indulgence letter a sacrament. So
the true treasure of the church is the most holy gospel of the glory and grace of God. So,
okay.
That's thesis number 62.
I mean,
this contrasts sharply with the church's focus on material riches, particularly from the sale of indulgences, highlighting the theological foundation for reform based on scriptural values rather than ecclesiastical wealth.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of these suggestions were adopted by the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so what is Protestants' excuse now for not being Catholic? These still are your args. What if I have a plan inclusive counterplan?
More reforms, you know? It's good to have. They might come up with new stuff, you know?
Yeah, I wonder what their current 95 theses would be. Probably that Pope Francis is pro-Palestine.
Why does the Pope, whose wealth today is greater than the wealth of the richest Crassus, build the Basilica of St. Peter with the money of poor believers rather than his own money?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any, you know, major disagreement with that, although Catholic patronage of the arts has made major contributions to our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the prelates having access to some money is bad. Anyway, Protestants also encourage tithing, so.
It's true. It's a little confusing to say his wealth is greater than the wealth of the richest Crassus, because as I understand, it's not his wealth, right? It's an institutional wealth.
Yeah, that's my understanding, at least in modern times, yeah. The Pope does not live super extravagantly. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then we would focus on his consumption.
Yeah.
It still wouldn't be the case that we would want to associate the wealth of the corporate entity with its top manager.
Yeah, you know? Right, exactly.
You know, my wealth and this PPP's wealth is not my wealth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true.
PPP true. Has one asset right now on my balance sheet.
What's the asset?
It's a printer.
Oh, does that printer still work?
It's I've depreciated it significantly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not appreciating in value, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's reliable about 50% of the time.
Yeah, we have a new one now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I need to get you to scan something because I've got learned helplessness around using the printer.
Yeah. Yeah.
About many things, really.
A lot of things. Let's your theme, basically.
Oh, no. Oh, there are lots of things I do. I made a huge dinner last night.
Dude, like at least a third of these are about indulgences. I would just put that all into indulgences are bad, and you could knock out a third of these theses. You know what I mean?
You just have sub-points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you want to fucking do that. But
just be like, one, indulgences are bad, A, et cetera, et cetera.
Here's this whole flourish where it just says, again, again, again.
Yeah.
Solid. Like he's given a speech.
Well, it sounds like what he wanted was just reform in the church, not an entirely new form of Christianity. So I think we should heed that.
It's, you know, but what about the, you know, what about the Lutheran churches of the Nordic countries? You know, we wouldn't want to lose those.
Do those still have a lot of impact on society there?
Yeah, like most of the population is are members and they pay the church tax. What do you think about church tax?
Yeah, I think it's not bad.
It's a voluntary tax, though, I think. Not entirely sure how that works.
Yeah, that's interesting. So they don't have to pay it.
They don't have to, but most people do, I believe. Let's see. Church tax, do you have to pay in Sweden? Sweden's probably the least likely, right?
Yeah.
You have to be a member. You have to be a member of the Church of Sweden. You pay a church fee.
Interesting.
The church and state are separated as of 2000, it says.
That's 2000. Well, they hung out a lot longer than most.
However, the burial tax is still paid by everyone, whether you belong to the church or not. So, you know, taxes are just a good way to collect money.
Yeah, I think we all recognize that.
Like, I could see saying, hey, you know, wouldn't it be easier rather than the churches having to go out and set up these payment networks and whatever, just say, hey, give us a list of the people who are on your rolls and we'll apply a little surtax to them, you know?
Yeah.
And if they don't want to, they can just get out or get off the rolls, you know?
Yeah. No, it's fair.
That just makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, it cuts down on complications for everyone.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift's new album. What did you think, Matt?
Not a fan.
Oh, no. So you're joining the chorus of people saying it sucks, actually.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, because she's coming off the Eras tour, which may be what, the best tour and the top tour in history of music or something,
yeah,
essentially. And unfortunately, she chose a very cringe name for the album. And then, you know, that just really... You're behind the eight ball at that point.
Yeah.
Right? Cringe name, real successful, and then just, yeah, just shit.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Just shit. 31 songs, too. Jesus Christ.
It's a lot to get through.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I have gotten through all of it, so maybe some of it's okay. I don't know.
Can you just do You Belong With Me?
Look, the plays are all in order of the album.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell everyone's falling off, right? So, like, the top song has 52 million plays, and then the next one, 35 million.
Oh, no.
And then by the time we're at song 16, it's 18 million. And then when we get to the very end, it's 9 million. So
wow.
People just giving up on it.
Yeah, they're just quitting. They're being like, enough.
Yeah, I tried some. 9 million, bravely, you know. pushed through the whole thing, it looks like. So
yeah, they were probably all music critics.
Oh, she has one with Florence and the Machine.
You can beat the heat if you beat the charges too. You can be the heat.
You can beat the heat.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it must be true. And my friends all smell like weed or little babies.
Maybe okay, both.
Could be
and
both.
The city yeah. reeks of driving myself crazy. Little did you know your home's really only a town you're just a guest in. So you work your life away just to pay for a timeshare down in Destin, Florida.
Okay.
Hey. This is not so bad, I guess. Florida. Yeah, I don't know. I'm tired of it.
Hard to hang in there with it. Yeah, it's not good.
It's rough.
Yeah.
She's still kind of simple, you know?
That's what I was thinking. It's like calling your album Tortured Poets Department when you're 34 years old is...
Yeah, that's definitely some teenage shit.
It's not something I would do, yeah. And she's talking about high school still. She's like, there's a girl who bullied me in high school, although people saying that song is about Kim Kardashian bullying her.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you know. Hey,
but it's like, get over high school. Get over people bullying you. You know, at some point, you got to leave that shit behind.
Yeah, I guess you just, you know, material-wise, what exactly do you think about?
Yeah.
You can do, you know, in the rap game, you can move to Braggadocia.
Yeah, which she should try doing that.
She should just be like, I'm the greatest.
Yeah, she's like, your tours could never.
I mean, you know, she would be correct in her case. Speaking of.
Yeah.
There was the American Civil Liberties Union.
Oh, yeah. How's that going?
Very good. And there was a quote of a Nicki Minaj lyric. So to take a step back... I don't know, 2-3 years ago, they fired an employee named Kate O.
Mm-hmm.
Kate O. The think tank. No, they fired her because she had said some critical things of management. And, you know, you're not actually allowed to fire someone for that, turns out. But the manager she criticized were black. And so then they tried to say, this is anti-black racism. But there's just nothing... You know, they're flailing. And so she filed charge at the NLRB, as you should in that case. And it's not going well for the ACLU at the NLRB. And I've been covering it at NLRBEdge.com. And after I covered it, it showed up in a number of places, some of which credited me, some of which did not. It showed up on the Federalist Society website, which credited me.
Mm-hmm.
It showed up on AEI's website, which credited me, and a number of publications. And then it also, weirdly, the New York Times ran a piece about it.
Did they credit you?
Did not credit me. No mention of me, even though everyone knows I broke the damn story, right? Is there any question about who broke the story on this?
No.
It was me.
It was you.
And, you know, 10 days later, the Times had a piece. No mention of me. That's okay. All right.
It's all right, though.
I guess I don't need that, personally.
They have anti-Brunig bias.
No, I think this is kind of their general trend, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, after she filed the charge, and then it kind of all blew up, you know, in the press and stuff, and they're getting a lot of negative feedback from people being like, this is ridiculous. You fired this lady. And what is your defense? You're trying. They were doing some weird stuff as well, where they were trying to make it to where they were trying to get the board to say she couldn't bring an unfair labor practice charge because they had an arbitration policy, and you know whatever. And apparently, it's got to the second in command at ACLU, who is AJ Hikes. Now, I should say, just for clarification purposes, at the beginning of the coverage of this, AJ Hikes' name was Amber Hikes.
Okay.
And now it has ceased to be that and now prefers to be called they, them.
Okay.
So
All right, just a little update.
Yeah, you know, I just, because if you read it, you might get confused. Who am I talking about?
Yeah.
But yes, it is.
AJ and Amber Hikes.
They're the same person, in fact. And they were having a meeting, an all-hands staff meeting, and said, among other things, this case is principally about a former employee who demonstrated a consistent pattern of anti-blackness in this organization. And I don't want this to get lost in the conversation that we have about this outside of this space. Over and over again, this person was counseled on her behavior. And so I don't want to be seen through a myopic lens as it's been represented here as somebody who's deeply involved in it. And we will not tolerate treatment of employees that like that. Certainly on my watch at this organization, just digging herself deeper, themselves deeper. I'm not going to get into a back and forth with folks, especially non-black folks, frankly, about what anti-blackness is and is not. But I will say very clearly that it's what's at the heart of this case.
All right.
So that's a ULP.
Okay.
That's a ULP.
How is that a ULP, Matt?
That's a ULP because it threatens unspecified reprisals for engaging in protected activity. In this case, by talking with coworkers and management about the unfair labor practice proceeding, you have a right, if you have a former coworker who has filed a charge at the board, to talk to management about that charge, give your opinion about it.
Yeah.
You have a right to do that. And here, Miss Mix Hikes.
Yeah.
Mix.mx.hikes is saying that you should not do that. A reasonable employee would view that as a threat of discipline or other kinds of reprisals if you were to talk about that. And I should say the region, the NLRB region, a charge has been filed on that, and the NLRB region has already found merit on that charge. In addition to this, and I found this very curious, Hikes said the following. The tone in this chat is all the way out of pocket. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
That's the ULP. Y'all got me on the right day today. I understand frustration. I understand the need to advocate. I understand that. We are your colleagues. We are your colleagues. Please, 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 please try to come at your colleagues with some sense. This is all I have to say. Laugh all you want, but baby, I'm not the one or the two or the three. Please, please, please try to get it together, y'all. The one or the two or the three is a reference to a Nicki Minaj song.
Okay.
One of the sort of braggadocio songs, right? Which is interesting in this context. And the lyric says, I'm on a whole nother level. These bitches is out of their league. These bitches ain't batting like me. You bitches ain't better than me. You bitches don't count. And these bitches can't count. I'm not the one, two, or the three. You bitches look up to me. You said you look up to her, but really you look up to me. So I don't know how deep that goes, but it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's a little weird in that context, but more ULPs. More ULPs coming at the ACLU. I kind of just kind of curious, like, what? Well, let me just fire Hikes, It just seems like the leadership of the ACLU is really just torching the shit out of their reputation.
Yeah.
It's real bad. I mean, even aside from this stuff right here, it's just like such a clown show now.
Yeah. You hate to see it.
And they're kind of out of step too. Like this kind of, like part of the reason why this stuff's not working is because everyone's kind of over it, you know?
Yeah.
Like just saying, oh, anytime's you know, anytime you criticize someone who's non-white, that makes you racist or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's like a bit you could do for a few years, but it's just not, you know, you need a little more than that.
Yeah.
These days for people not to just kind of, just kind of roll their eyes at it, you know?
Yeah. You need people to bring more than that to the table.
A little bit more, and especially in this context where this is a worker, you know, exercising their rights, where we understand that you can criticize supervisors. That's an important thing that we uphold here on the left. Certainly I uphold it by filing charges at the NLRB all the time.
You're doing your part.
I am doing my part. I'm out here just mining the ULPs all day. Though I didn't file one recently that I could have filed because I'm just really out of time these days. The Oakland Athletics Aramark, their concession stand operator, told their employees that they cannot talk publicly about the Oakland A's decision to move because they're moving to Sacramento.
Is that fair? Is that something you're allowed to do?
That's a ULP.
Oh, no.
That's a ULP.
That, too, is a ULP.
That is also a ULP because, of course, you have a right to criticize your working conditions. And what could be more of a working condition than if the team is going to move to another city and now you're going to get laid off?
Yeah.
So that statement is a coercive statement, violates Section 881. The thing I thought was interesting about it almost made me file a charge. And who knows? I still have 6 months to file a charge.
So you may come back around to it.
Maybe. Is clearly the next day they talked to a lawyer and the lawyer was like, no, you can't be saying that. And so they put out a statement where they said, oh, you of course you can talk about it, but not on behalf of the company.
Yeah.
Right. And that's fine. You can say you're not allowed to talk on behalf of the company, especially if you clarify that, otherwise they're allowed to speak about it. But the problem is that doesn't fix the fact that you said the coercive thing.
Yeah.
In order to fix the fact that you said the coercive thing, you have to repudiate it. And there's a whole line of cases about that, about what that requires. And they did not satisfy that. So there's still a ripe ULP sitting out there for anyone who wants to file it against Aramark at the Oakland A's stadium. So
there you go.
It's fun.
It's fun. Yeah, you've been having a lot of fun with this.
My NLRB shit. I figured out how to do the dockets thing finally. Though I'm in the process right now of downloading, 750,000 files from the NLRB website. And I know at least one of them. It does not appear to have... yeah.
Matt's threatening to make me learn how he coded all this.
Yeah, I'm going to describe the code to her.
Great.
Just this one, this 34 line.
Really looking forward to that.
No, but so we'll have all the PDFs from all the dockets and have them be word searchable, which is going to be really cool. And today I figured out how to integrate AI, the Claude Opus AI, into the database querying thing. And essentially what it does is it feeds Opus the structure of your database and whatever arbitrary thing you want to send it, like a question, and then it tries to answer the question with its knowledge base, which sometimes it has, right? And it also recommends, it suggests a way of querying the database, so it gives you a SQL query back, and then the thing just runs it.
Matt says he's querying the database.
So, I'm querying SQL, but that's kind of cool. It's not quite full blown. I want to be able to have run AI just on the whole corpus of text that I have. That still seems to be prohibitively expensive, but it was a neat thing to play with. The question I asked it was, "What is the test for determining whether someone was terminated for protected activity?" And the AI came back with, it's called the right line test. And then it suggested that I search. It gave me a SQL query, which automatically ran to search the text of my database for all the cases for the phrase right line test.
Yeah.
And there it was. So it got the answer and it wrote a SQL, query to search for cases that would be relevant. And lo and behold, the SQL query pulled up cases that were relevant.
Wow.
It was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's amazing to see what you can do with your many talents in combination.
They all work together,
They do. It's an understanding of systems. That's the key.
Combine the autism with the programming and labor law, I feel like that's the next frontier.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing all my interests together. They're like, yeah, this is, okay, yeah, maybe for think tank. And me, like, no, it's all going to come together one day.
Yeah.
And I'll just bang my head against it until I have an AI labor lawyer tool or something. And then someone will pay me a bunch of money for it or something.
Yeah, you can sell it to people.
That's the game. I need to figure out how to make money on this.
Yeah.
You know?
I trust that you'll figure it out.
I don't really want to go... I don't really want to, like, go sell this shit.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to have the unions, all the, like, big unions give me some money each year, and then I can just make it publicly available, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be a good setup. If not that, then you have to go, like, law firm to law firm. I guess you would hire a salesperson or something.
Yeah.
Just seems like a drag, really. You know? We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
It's looking good, though. Let's see how many I've downloaded. I started downloading it right before we began. 26,000 files so far, so got a long way to go.
So far, so good.
So far. It does get hung occasionally, and then I'll restart it, but I had to learn how to do multi-threading. It was a whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
It was a whole fucking thing, but it's looking good now, so.
Well, I trust that you're out there killing the game.
I'm pumped. I'm pumped. I'm going to have clearly going to have the best NLRB legal research tool that exists. If I don't already.
Honestly.
But it's just getting better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm going to start, you know, and I can do analysis on all the lawyers at the board as well, because I've got all their names and stuff. That could be fun.
Yeah. You always come up with such interesting things to focus on.
AI, you know, new frontier.
AI and also labor law. You know, you're specializing in a new kind of board law.
Oh, my... You're talking about my coercive rules defense thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That shit's great. They don't know what to do with it. The employers don't know what to do with it.
They haven't come up with a defense yet.
There's no one has a reaction to it yet. There's no counter to the move. You just sit there and just slowly suffocate.
Just die, yeah.
Under the pressure. That was the funny thing about that case. Like, there's got to be a way. There isn't. Give up. That's what I said afterwards, actually. I was like, look, you know, because part of the problem in that case, and this is probably going to be a problem in the Crowder case too, just because people don't seem to clock this, but people want to maintain their lawsuit against you.
Yeah.
Even once you've said that lawsuit's illegal, right, and you point it to them, there's a tendency to say, I'm not going to drop it. I'm not going to drop it unless you drop yours or whatever. Like, to treat it as like a negotiating chip. And that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, on its face, to say, okay, so yeah, you got these charges against me, but I still have my outstanding lawsuit against you, so I'm going to hold on to it and use it as like a bargaining chip. The problem is that it's not really a bargaining chip at all, because I cannot withdraw the charges.
Yeah.
You know, that's not something I'm even enabled to do. I can submit a withdrawal request, but I can't withdraw them. And here's the thing. Every second that you maintain your lawsuit, you're just running up the bill.
Yeah.
It's like, you think you're pushing it on. You're not pushing shit on me. You're the one that's going to have to pay all these legal fees. So keep on. You know, I don't care. You know, and the client might care. But, you know, like from a just kind of realistic perspective, maintaining a lawsuit just costs them money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that it gets fully clocked that way. Like, it's just really frustrating to be like, wait a minute, so my chip is actually something that's hurting me? It's like, yeah. Like, what you should do is just voluntarily drop your lawsuit. Like, yeah. You should just unilaterally be like, oh, shit, okay, and then drop your lawsuit to mitigate your damages. Because if you keep the lawsuit going, you're just running up fees that you're going to have to pay. But they don't do that. They can't quite get there mentally. And of course, I'm sure it's very frustrating to file a lawsuit, think you're in the driver's seat, then have someone file a charge, and then look down the barrel and be like, okay, so the best move for us is just to give up on our thing?
Yeah.
And then just let them come at us? It's like, yeah. Yeah. Because that's what the law says. That's, you're breaking the law. So, yeah. Yeah, you should cease doing that as quickly as possible. I know to you it seems like bad faith, unfair, but in fact, if you can get out of your little lawyer brain for a second, you're breaking the law.
Yeah.
Which you're, the lawsuit's illegal. So, yeah, you can't be like, I'll stop my illegal activities if. That's not really how it's supposed to work. And it does not, in fact, work that way in this case, as frustrating as that is. And the fact that you didn't know the law, you know, that's on you. That is on you. Because I certainly know. I certainly know about it. In fact, I have a website, nlrbedge.com, where you can read all about it. You have no excuses. It's not even paywalled right now. It's free. So, on notice. On notice. Did we want to do this article about Polly?
Let's save it for next time, because my computer's almost dead.
Not thinking ahead.
I know.
Thinking ahead.
I know.
All righty. Well, you know, I guess we got some content. 70 minutes. That's not too bad.
It's not too bad.
Not too bad. We've done more, but I guess we'll just move along.
I love the dialectic.